You ready? You comfy?
Sure, I feel great. Don't I look relaxed? I'm half asleep.
You look relaxed. We're putting you to sleep at this early hour in the morning at 9:30. Has your cutting room gotten earlier and earlier as you've gotten older and older?
We start 7 o'clock in the morning here.
Is that forever? Or
forever.
Wow.
If I'm under pressure, we even start earlier.
So was that something you acquired as a way of working from an
yeah,
somebody
I think
else?
I think I acquired that in television. I started out in television. Mm-hmm. So
back in New York, you were doing TV, or you did it out here?
No, out here. I started out here.
Uh-huh.
In New York, I started out, I was a messenger boy.
So what made you think editing was a good idea?
I didn't think of it. I didn't even know what editing was. It just fell into place.
So you just moved to Los Angeles and eventually fell into it?
No, what it was, I got a job at an ad agency. Mm-hmm. What was his name again? Footcone and Belding. Or was it the B.O.? You remember the B.O. company years ago? Milton B.O.?
There was B.O. and, yeah.
I think I started out, was it B.O.? Might have been the B.O. company. Anyway, I was at Foot Corner Building. Uh-huh. Then I moved over to the B.O. company because this fellow liked me. Mm-hmm. And he was in charge of commercials. So I filed all the prints and mm-hmm. I did all the stuff. And I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I did it anyway. And eventually he said, why don't you come out to California with me?
Hmm.
I said, fine, I'll go. I was loose as a goose. So I went to California with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 3 months, he said, look, I'm through shooting these commercials, and you ought to come back with me. I said, yeah, I'd like to stay. So he got me he introduced me to a guy by the name of Danny Kahn, no relation,
mm-hmm.
Desilu. Danny took me on as a male secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, Danny said, look, you're not going to get any place unless you're in the union here. And actually, mm-hmm. he put me in the editor's union. I didn't even know what it was,
Mm-hmm.
Really, I was that naive.
So you were in the editor's union, but you hadn't cut anything yet?
No, I haven't touched anything. Well, you start out as an apprentice, right?
Right.
Start out as an apprentice, and then I became an assistant. And in those days, I don't know if you remember this, there was a thing called an 8-year rule.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't edit until you were in the union 8 years. Because they don't have it today.
Right.
But the older editors were protecting themselves.
Makes some sense.
It's interesting. Anyway, eventually, I went from there to the next step and the next step. And
so was there a point at which you fell in love with editing, or were you just kind of...
I never fell in love with editing. I really didn't. Is that working now? I never fell in love with editing. I didn't know what it was. I wasn't sure about it. But I was a good assistant, and I mm-hmm. assisted a lot of fellas. And eventually the time came when I was assisting a fellow by the name of Danny Nathan, and he was with Bing Crosby Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, why don't you take a scene and cut it? I said, I don't know what to do. He said, take the scene and cut it.
Hmm.
So I took the scene and I cut it. And he looks at it and says, let's make more changes.
Hmm.
So I did it again. He looked at it, not yet, make more changes. Mm-hmm. I said, well, eventually he said, okay. And he put it in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran it for the Crosby people. Are you interested in all of this?
Yes, I am fascinated. And this was on Hogan's Heroes, or this was
No. This was another show.
Okay.
This is another show that Danny was on.
Uh-huh.
And it was an hour show.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran it for the executives. And the executives said to Danny Nathan, "Boy, you did a good job on that scene." And he says, "I didn't do it. Mike Kahn did it," which is such a generous, wonderful thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Oh, great! Really, it's very nice." Well, anyway, I had a friend, Jerry London.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry London was just starting a show for Bing Crosby called Hogan's Heroes. He says, Mike, if you come on to Hogan's Heroes mm-hmm. with me as my assistant for 6 shows, I'm not interested in editing. I'll be a director or producer or whatever. I said, fine. I went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And surely after 6 shows, I started editing Hogan's Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on that for like 6 years. I've done over 140 episodes, and I really learned editing on that show because each half hour was a different director and
right.
they came back and forth, and I learned all the different styles and how these directors worked.
Hmm.
And I was so nervous the first time I showed it to a director, and he said, good, that's good work, so-and-so, that kind of thing.
Hmm.
And I stayed on that show, and that's where I learned how to edit, really, on Hogan's Heroes.
So just by doing it so often for so many years, it just...
Yeah. And you know, the directors had input, and Jerry helped me a lot, because if I was way off base, if I didn't cut something well, he gave me, some good thoughts on it. But I learned the editing craft there, just cutting and cutting and cutting every day. Mm-hmm. And eventually we got real busy. We had to bring in a second editor, but that's where I learned everything, from Danny to Jerry London. It was just marvelous. Don't forget, I didn't know what I was doing most of the time.
But you faked it well.
I faked it well enough to get by, right? Mm. And then...
People didn't know that you were, though. You were, I mean, before, everybody thinks of you as Steven's guy, but you were kind of became Ivan Dixon's guy coming out of Hogan's Heroes.
That's right. I did a couple of films with him.
Nobody really... Was it strange cutting blaxploitation films? Or
no.
Did you think of them as that? Or
no, I didn't. It was just film. Mm-hmm. It was just film. So I did The Spook Who Sat by the Door, which was a big deal for the black folks. And, yeah. and what we would do, we'd go to, after I cut a scene, they'd take me to Deluxe, and it was like 100 people in the room, all black lawyers and politicians, and they'd show them the scene. Now we need $1.5 million more to do so-and-so. Huh. And they'd show it, and they'd get money, and then they did the rest. And that's the way that show went. And I did a lot of other kind of, like Black Belt Jones and all that stuff. And I loved it. I love that kind of stuff.
So did you call your parents at home in New York and say, I'm doing Black Belt Jones?
No, I don't call them at all.
Okay.
But I was just, I was learning my craft. I was learning how things work. I used to think they just put, you know, the old phrase, they just put the good parts in and take the bad parts out. But you sort of got to know what that is, so...
So how'd you end up hooked up with George C. Scott?
Very interesting. George C. Scott loved Hogan's Heroes.
Huh.
Loved it. He watched it every week. He had a friend called Ollie Julian, who was the writer. Mm-hmm. You know, they're deceased now, you know. And he went to the writer. He went to Ollie Julian, said, you know, I'm doing this first picture and for Warner Brothers. I'm going to direct it and act in it. And I'd like that editor who does Hogan's Heroes.
Hmm.
So Julian spoke to Eddie Feldman, who was a wonderful man, and he said, fine. So I went over, and I was, you know, there was a production meeting, and I was invited. I was sitting in the back, and I didn't know anybody. And George looked up and said, this is Michael Caine. He knew who I was, evidently, and he introduced me to everybody, and I went on location with him, and I did a show.
Hmm.
And he was wonderful. He's very intractable.
Mm-hmm.
You could, you know, once you cut it,
right.
He didn't want you to make any changes.
Hmm.
It was different than what what it is today. But it worked out very well with him. And I did two pictures with him. And everybody wondered, who is this TV editor that's ending up doing features with the George C. Scott?
Right.
And that really helped me.
So was it different for you in terms of what your work was? I mean, were you kind of just continuing the same thread you had started on Hogan's Heroes? Or
it was the same thing. And I realized that editing features it had nothing to do with knowledge. It had to do with how you feel about something.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to make something work, and intuitively you feel something. And I had to learn to come in contact with that, because everybody talks about what they did, this, that. A lot of the other editors, they're really, really good at speaking, and I was not good, and I just did it from feeling, basically. If it felt right, I show that, you know, right?
But the whole thing has changed a lot in these, I mean, besides the technology of it, in terms of how people see editing and how people want to stick their fingers in it.
Oh, sure, it's changed, especially now with this Avid, everybody feels they can get their cut.
Yeah.
Direct has a cut, the studio has a cut, you know, this guy has a cut, Skeezix has a cut. But, when there are too many cuts, it waters down, I think, the editor.
Right.
It waters down the director, too.
So it's nice that you have protection.
What?
It's nice that you have protection from Steven, it seems.
Well, with Steven, certainly, I cut for him, I edit for him, and he makes his adjustments, and I do it, and we don't have any interference from anybody. He shows it to some trusted people, but that's what's great about Steven. If he has a feeling that something works, he goes with his feeling. Mm-hmm. You got to have a strong argument to get him away from that, you know, because he's that's how he's been successful. He feels that the shock should come up at this time, or this, that should happen here, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And he always says, he and George, they say they shoot for the editing room. Because it's not a picture.
Right.
It's not a movie until it's been edited.
So how did you that relationship start?
With Steven?
Yeah.
Again, I did a lot of features. Mm-hmm. And I met people, and Steve was looking for somebody after Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked to every editor in town. Finally, I was interested. Irv Kirshner and I think Owen Roisman recommended me to him.
Mm-hmm.
I did a Man Called Horse with them and some other things. And he and I went into his office and I met him, and very short conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to detail every word we right. said, but then when I walked out, he said, "I'll let you know," right? And 3-4 days later, I get a call on the phone, and he says, "Why don't you meet me out at Devil's Tower, Wyoming, and you know, and we'll work on this picture." And that's what happened.
So, did it feel any different than another meeting with a filmmaker about working on a film?
It did. Now, what felt different about Steven? What was different was he was incredibly knowledgeable on what's possible and what works.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier to work with him. Because if I had a problem, he understood what my problem was.
Mm.
And I'd say, "Steve, I can't do so-and-so and so-and-so." And he understood it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do what a lot of people might try to do and play with it and play with it and play with it. He knew the range of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
On Close Encounters, my first film with him, there was a time when Neary is running up the hill and trying to get away from the helicopter. And he's going to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't put it together. I didn't know what to do. So I went to Steven. I said, "Steven, you know, I don't know what to do here." And he said, "Isn't that wonderful? You're coming to me and ask me what to do." He said, "That's an honest." He liked that.
Right.
He liked that I was straightforward and honest. I didn't know what to do.
Mm.
So we sat, we talked, and then I put it together, and it was okay. And that's the kind of relationship we have. If he asks me to do something and I have trouble doing it, I say, "Hey, Steve, you better help me out on this because I'm lost," you know. But there's an honesty there, and, mm-hmm. and we're not ashamed, that, you know. And he doesn't mind my being wrong, which I like.
He doesn't mind telling you you're wrong, or doesn't mind you being wrong or making mistakes? Or?
If I try to cut a scene a different way,
right?
He likes that because maybe it'll give him another point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, if it doesn't work, then he'll help me make it work, and I've eliminated that option.
Mm-hmm.
But normally we run together. He selects his takes, and then I put it together and all that kind of, just like every other editor.
Right.
The other thing is his range of knowledge is you know, mind-boggling.
So jumping in to a movie like Close Encounters as your first picture with him, I mean, it's a pretty complicated, long movie compared to anything else you had done. You had done, you know, kind of more traditional, smaller, you know, set pieces.
Yeah, I did a lot of smaller. I mean, Man Called Horse was big, but it's true. But it's just the beautiful thing about editing is, I guess maybe writers feel that way. I see all that film up there. It doesn't matter. I'm
right.
doing one piece at a time,
mm-hmm.
one scene at a time, one cut at a time, and I have the ability not to get too shook when there's a lot of film. I just do one thing at a time.
Right. And yeah. Do the effects of change your, at that point, your...
Effects?
Yeah, at that point you were putting in spaceships and all that stuff.
We put placeholders in there, that's all.
Mm-hmm. And so it feels just as natural as shooting, cutting a scene.
Just like cutting, yeah. People said, "How did you do that? How did you do..." I said, "I just put a piece of leader in and I said, what's on it, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
And special effects liked it because at least I gave them some kind of a length.
Right.
Because it cost a fortune if you... You know, they're going to do the whole thing and you're going to take a little piece.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, even today, I cut a scene and then they do the effects and fit it in and that kind of thing.
So you were used to doing more than one film with a director. You'd done a couple with George C. Scott. You'd done a few with Evan Dixon. Steven doing a second film with you probably wasn't a shock.
No, it wasn't a shock, no.
Was there a point at which you started to realize this was going to be a marriage?
What, between me and Steven?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you when it became a marriage. When I left, I don't know if my memory's right here, but you could check it out. I think after I did the first film with Steve, I left to do a picture called, was it Fatal Attraction?
Did do Fatal Attraction?
You didn't know that.
Well, I did.
I think it was The Eyes of Laura Mars. Mm-hmm. And I get a call in New York, and he sent me a beautiful gold scissor, all gold. And he said, thank you for your help, so-and-so, so-and-so. And then what? After that show, he took me back, and then I knew that I'd rather work with him than anybody else. So the only time I'd work with anybody else would be, if he's not busy.
Right.
So I was able to do the Fatal Attractions, the Twister, you know, things like that, other pictures.
How did you end up not doing E.T.?
That's an interesting story. He put me on Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'd like you to do E.T. And we sat down and talked. And he said, come to think of it, he said, E.T. is Poltergeist is a harder movie to put together. Mm-hmm. Difficult. So you do that, and I'll get somebody else for E.T. And then you'll come back after that. Mm-hmm. I said, fine. And it was as simple as that. As simple as that. And he took me right back, and it was no big deal. He ended up shooting a lot of stuff on Poltergeist.
Right. Secretly. It was such a controversy at the time.
Yeah, I don't know if it's secretly, but...
Questioning who was doing what.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm in this editing room. It's quiet. It's dark. I don't know all the mishigas that goes on outside,
So as you do these movies with Steven, and you're doing Close Encounters, and you're doing Poltergeist, does the success of the... I mean, you're saying, actually just answer the question on some level, that you're in the room in the dark doing your work.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening outside. I don't care.
So when the box office takes off and it's getting covers of magazines and things like that, doesn't affect you?
No.
You're not conscious of it?
I'm conscious of it, yes, because it's talked about.
Right.
But it doesn't affect me anyway.
Does it give you, at what point do you get your pleasure? Is your pleasure just being in the room doing the work? Is it scene by scene that you get your pleasure? Is it when it all finally comes together?
Well, I get my pleasure certainly scene by scene and working with Steven. It's because I'm accepted by a real smart man. Mm-hmm. I'm accepted as his editor. And that makes me feel good. And that's a joy for me. Mm-hmm. Not everybody who works can get pat in the back so often, So it works out real well. And then all of a sudden you start getting a couple of awards. Mm-hmm. Like the first thing I got was an Emmy or something. I got some Emmy awards on the Lincoln. Mm-hmm. No, not Lincoln.
Eleanor and Franklin?
Eleanor Franklin. Mm-hmm. Got an Emmy Award on that, and I started getting stuff. And it's amazing that in television, editors don't get reviews on from television shows, but here in the trades, I got some reviews. Mm-hmm. That they like the editing and so on. So that was sort of nice, But I don't have an ego problem. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me at all. I just want to be the best I could be. I know you've heard that before, and it sounds corny, but I really work at it.
Well, it seems you would have to in this job like this, after all these years, that ultimately you have to get the satisfaction from the work because you're not getting reviews. It's not like you're the actor or the...
Right.
That's
true. And it's okay with me. I get a tremendous amount of enjoyment from working with Steven and getting something done that's challenging. Mm-hmm. And every film he does, it's a bit different. Oh, sure, you do a couple of Jurassic Parks, but they're different too.
Right.
Same thing with Indiana Jones films. They're different. Mm-hmm. But outside of those, every show is different.
Right.
So I get a variety of opportunity to, to do stuff.
So that keeps you from getting bored, I guess, doing the same.
I never get bored. Never get, not here, not, at the movie hall or something. Don't forget, you have in your hands the power to influence people sitting in seats that they paid for. So if Steven agrees or doesn't agree, we'll make the changes, and we're putting something out there that millions of people are reacting to. That makes me feel pretty damn good.
So do you watch a movie and go, do you watch other movies that you didn't cut and look at the cutting, or
no.
Do you lose yourself in them?
I don't. Don't look at the cutting.
Do you when you see a movie that you've done, poking at the cutting?
I hate to say this, but I almost never look at movies that I've done. Mm-hmm. I don't like to go back and look at them.
So once it's out the door, you're done.
I try to forget it, and I'll tell you why. I don't want to carry all that baggage with me. Mm-hmm. If you carry all the cuts, and an editor works on every cut, obviously, so
right.
So you tend to remember everything that you do. Mm-hmm. And one show doesn't equate to the other, so I try to leave that baggage behind, and I'm starting like it's the first time I'm cutting a film. There's a word that, it was a book written on that, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Shunryu Suzuki wrote that book, and I read it, and I like that idea. Like if you attack a new job or a new show, a new article, whatever, like it's the first time you're doing it, it's fresh. And you're not locked in by anything you've done in the past. Although what you've done in the past is good experience. But still, I'm not locked in with all the baggage of remembering what I've done in the past.
So you don't think, oh, that was one of my great cuts, or that was a scene that was particularly challenging and I made it work, or?
No. It's not that I made it work. It's something that, it's just my personality is that way. I just find it a challenge, and it's good. If it works, great. If it doesn't, I go to Steve and say, help.
And I guess he's pretty good at helping.
He's pretty damn good. He's very smart. But as I say, to work with an experienced director is so much better than working with a new director. New directors will drive you mashugana. They really will. They want to try everything, and they don't know when it's as good as it could be. That's the key. Know when it's... What producer said to me, maybe it's Fred Weintraub. He said, you may cut a little different, but it won't mean a dollar more at the box office, he used to say. You know, you could cut it and you could change it and all that, but it won't mean a dollar more at the box office. It's the overall view, you know.
But well, it's funny because yesterday I was having a conversation with a young producer who was specific, who actually said, if you have a choice, never work with a first-time director.
He said that too?
A woman, yeah.
Oh,
she
really?
Said it's not because they're bad or whatever. It's just because they think that they have to like still try everything out. They don't know when to say, you know, the budget is what the budget is.
That's
we're going to change days and fix it. Or
that's right. He may be a brilliant young man, but look, I went over to another studio. They asked me to come in just between shows. Had 4 or 5 months, and I went in, and I was like a consultant. And they wanted me to look at the cut films and see if I had any suggestions, which I did, you know, and they told me to make some changes, which I did. And I think it was very much resented by the directors. They never said thank you. They never called me back. They never said they're going to use anything. It was almost like I'm bugging in on their stuff. And from their point of view, I probably was. But it was just to help. And so the new guys, it's tough.
So you have been kind of a, for Amblin / DreamWorks, you know, in the last number of 20 years, you've worked on a number of the films that other people, Frank Marshall's film and
yeah, I did Frank Marshall's two films,
Is that just because the family is the family and you're...
Yeah, he said, well, you know, if I cut for Michael, why shouldn't he cut for me? So so I did those two films for him. They came out pretty good. We had a lot of fun, especially the one with the spiders. I mean, I sat in the audience and they went, and you see like a wave of people going back in the seats as I'm sitting up high, and it was so much fun to watch. I get a kick out of that. You know, that's the beauty of editing. You can cut something a certain way, hoping you'll get that reaction. But when you do, it's a kick.
Well, you don't really cut comedies very much, but the thrillers are... the same kind of visceral reaction, I guess, as a comedy.
Well, actually, I've done a lot of comedy. I've done 6 years of Hogan's Heroes.
That's true.
I mean, think about
Which I laughed at through my entire years.
And that gave me the sense of comedy.
Yeah.
Also, when you do the Raiders pictures were comedic.
That's true.
So I have a good sense of comedy.
But you also get people jumping out of their seats in a lot of your
That's pictures. Right. That's right. And, you know, it's tough to... A lot of people do that, I think. They say an editor... he's a comedy editor, he's a dramatic editor, you know, action editor. That's not really fair. You know, a good editor should be able to work all this material and help a director. We're there to help. We don't work solo, you know?
Well, it's almost like an actor, I guess, who has to, you know, have different things you can do. It's
Absolutely.
Not like one thing.
Absolutely.
As much as people like to stereotype.
Yeah, and Hogan's Heroes, you learn all the technology, you learn what you could do filmically with overlaps, with all these things, little things you could do, tricks and things. And
a little bit of LeBeau here, a little bit of Newkirk here.
That's right.
Always good for a punch-in.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. But you learn all that stuff. Listen, there were a lot of rules that Eddie Feldman gave us. No cold cuts. this isn't like New York where a cold cut is something you eat on a plate.
Right.
A cold cut is cutting to somebody with no dialogue over or no laugh over it. Mm-hmm. It's a cold cut. And he said that in comedy you don't do that. That was one. Number two, don't overlap a joke. Let the guy finish his line, then you go to react. Like, but he had a lot of rules like that, and they really work well. They really work well.
So does Stephen give you a ton of coverage, or do you guys, is he very specific about what he's giving you to work with? Or
he shoots a lot of coverage. And I found out on Close Encounters there was a lot of coverage there. And at one point we decided, and I was cutting, and it was fine. At one point I said, you know, it's so much better if I could sit with you before I start using the scissor and get your okay takes, or what you think are the okay takes. It would save weeks over the course of the weeks. Because all I do, I go to the takes that he likes. And that we found that was our technique. That's what we do even today. Because a lot of editors start editing. And why should they edit with the takes that he doesn't like? Might as well. I might like him, but he's the man, right? So the idea is to get his okay takes and his concept on the scene, then I go to it, you know.
With Schindler and Jurassic, you guys kind of started the trend of cutting while shooting.
We started that before.
Really? When had you started? When was the first?
First one was Close Encounters.
Close Encounters.
I started editing while he was shooting.
So were you in Wyoming in the trailer?
In Wyoming, yeah. And what was beautiful about it, it had a lot of great purposes. Once he ran with me, I could put it together quickly. And while he's still shooting, he could look at that scene and say, gee, maybe I need another close-up here. Maybe I need another reading. Maybe I need an insert. And he'd be able to look at a roughed-out scene and make certain decisions based on it. And that was tremendous for a director. It just saves him a lot of time. He's not surprised when he sees the editor's first cut and says, oh, my God, I hate that take. And why didn't I get a close-up? You know, it makes sense. So that's what we did. We started on Close Encounters. While we started it, we had a script supervisor who the last bunch of weeks didn't really write too much stuff down. So we had all this film all over the floor, literally rolls. And we had to look at each one. So he took a pad with a pencil, and we started looking at it, and he started writing down what the takes were, you know? And that started the concept.
So when you do a double dip like Jurassic and Schindler's, is that as much of a feat to you as it is to the people on the outside world? I mean, everybody, I think, was in shock that two high-quality movies and two important movies could come out in 1 year, basically, from the same director. I mean, obviously, now Clint does it all the time. But was that as much of a trick as it seemed from the outside, or were you guys just that?
Oh no, we were with it. I mean, in all honesty, Clint doesn't shoot a lot of footage. Doesn't shoot a lot of footage, and not a lot of coverage and stuff. So, but with us, we had a lot of coverage. Jurassic Park, we were in Poland, and there was a saucer up there. We'd be talking to Lucasfilm, and we'd be seeing shots from Jurassic Park for the first time. It was exciting. But Schindler, you got to compartmentalize your life in the business. When I'm working on this scene, I'm just working on this scene. Look, we're doing it now. I'm half on Tintin, and I'm half on the other one.
So speaking of that, you're famously, you guys are the last holdouts on cutting on film and shooting on film, and now you're not for the first time.
That's right.
Is it completely different? Does it feel similar but just a different machine? What does it feel like for you?
It's the same thing. The only difference is if you take time to learn the machine, the machine really makes no sense. I mean, the way they've, you know, put it together. So, but you can learn it. You can learn what markers for cut, what markers for overlap, that kind of thing. But I have somebody sitting here with me. And I think fast, and she makes the changes to me fast. First cut, I could do the first cut myself. I don't have it. But she makes all the changes because there are a lot of tracks. Six, seven, eight tracks and pictures. and my God, if I had to do all that, I'd have a heart attack, you know. But I let her do all of that.
So you've adjusted the machinery to fit how you do it?
To fit how I do it, I even fixed the board here.
Huh.
And my system is we have two boards.
Mm-hmm. So what does that give you?
One for her.
One for her and one for you?
One for me.
So you're like Ferrante and Teicher.
Exactly.
Playing dueling pianos.
Exactly. Except I'm the lead piano.
Mm-hmm. So does doing Tintin all, I mean, on top of that, Tintin is the most digital production, certainly, that Steven's ever done.
Yeah.
And you've probably ever cut. Is that a different thing for you at all?
No.
Feels the same.
It's the same. It's editing.
Mm-hmm.
Editing is the same. Editors and people shouldn't get all shook because it's that. We still get what we need filmically mm-hmm. on the screens, and we cut it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same, you know, the same values, the editing values. Everything's the same, mm-hmm. except that when you're through, you send it to Weta.
Right.
New Zealand, and they put the mouth movements in the eye and everything else, and they mm-hmm. make it look nice. But editing is editing.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the executives at studios, they think it's faster and it's this and that. And sure, it's faster for the editor.
Right.
But in the long run, with all the playing and all the, you know, everybody playing around with it,
yeah.
It takes about the same amount of time.
Well, Jim Cameron talked last year about putting the camera, the digital camera, in Steven's hands for the first time
That's
in
right.
New Zealand, and that he saw very quickly Steven Spielberg shots, quote-unquote, coming out of it. Is that your experience also? Is that even
Absolutely.
Though it's...
Absolutely. In fact, he handles the camera a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Like down Giant Studios down there, he's on the floor picking out his shots, mm-hmm. doing it. And he loved it, and it was fun.
So you don't see a difference in the footage you're getting feels like what you're used to feeling
yeah,
from Steven.
Yeah. They're not finished shots like you have when you shoot film
mm-hmm.
because there's work to be done around it.
Right.
But as far as the way he shoots and the way he likes to do work on film, it's the same. Editing is the same.
And War Horse is kind of the opposite because it's from what I gather, it's, you know, you're doing real horses and a lot of them.
That's right.
Big visual, but all completely real.
That's right.
And again, you're just cutting what you get? Comes
just
in the
cutting room. What I get. But again, I want to stress, I don't cut from what I call knowledge.
Right.
I have to come in tune, I have to feel it. Because Steven feels it. And I want to be on his wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a lot of things intuitively. When he's on a set, he feels it. He feels another shot. Or here we're running. He said, what about that shot we didn't use? Or, you know, he feels mm-hmm. it. And I really relate to that.
And when you see the shots in your dailies or your yeah. edit bay, that eventually an audience is going to have their breath taken away by it. Because Steven always has a number of those shots in every movie where just forced perspective and everything is beautiful. Do you get to have that moment? Do you go, oh, my God, that's...
Oh yeah,
that's the money.
No, we'll look at dailies and say it's gorgeous, absolutely good. We have some shots in War Horse. It's just fantastic.
Yeah,
just fantastic shots.
I'm looking forward to it. I saw the show in London
yeah.
last year, whatever, and
yeah.
we heard he was doing it, and thought, okay, Steven's gonna do puppets or
no.
But this sounds like it's completely a whole other thing.
Yeah, it starts off. I mean, you know, it's we shot it in Devon, and you know, it's gorgeous mm-hmm. down there, and. The horses are beautiful, and the farms are beautiful, beautiful scenery,
mm-hmm.
and every shot is gorgeous. And eventually you get to the war part of it, and it's really, really something.
And you're out there cutting as you go?
That's right.
In Devon?
That's it.
So you travel on whatever, wherever he goes?
Wherever he goes, I have my trailer.
Yeah. And is your trailer like a set trailer? Do you have a decked out trailer?
No, my trailer has an avid. It has everything we need to edit.
But you don't have like a Francis used to have the Silverfish that was kind of a traveling editing bay as he went. You just set up whatever, you know, if you're setting up in Devon, you're getting equipment from London. Not
well, the trailer's done a priori,
uh-huh.
the trailer. And it's all set out. Pat does all of that. He sets it out. So I could go in there. And maybe just run with Steven and then go back to my editing room.
Right.
Or I could edit out there.
Hmm.
And it just goes along. Where Steven's trailer goes, the guys bring my trailer. It's right next to him.
And you're also giving credit, apparently, for another tiny movie this year, Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Right.
Are you just coming on as consultant, or are you actually
cutting?
No,
that was interesting. I did some work for Jerry Bruckheimer. Wonderful man.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, talented guy. And... he said, look, we're starting Pirates of the Caribbean. You got 2 or 3 months. Why don't you work on it from the beginning with another editor?
Mm-hmm.
who's a very nice fellow. And when you have to leave, you leave. And I did. So I cut, you know, large majority of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know they would give me credit. I didn't ask for it, you know.
Well, so far, who knows? What
so far, who knows? If they give me credit, I thank them for it. I really do. But I enjoyed that show. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was pure fun.
Does the 3D, or two of these movies are 3D, does that have any effect on your cutting at all?
Again, no.
Are you looking at it in 3D, or are you even thinking about it? Or
no, I just look at it a regular way.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Regular way. I don't. Nothing gets in the way of the editing process. It's the process of your thinking.
So have you seen scenes from Tintin, for instance, in 3D?
Yeah.
And think, okay, we need to adjust the cut somewhat because of the 3D, or is it even an issue?
Well, sometimes you do adjust it. Sometimes it repositioning, or sometimes the cuts would not be in sync, and you got to move them. But that's all technical.
Mm-hmm. And is there a difference in terms of how you work when you can change it so readily? I mean, because it's in a machine, because it's digital,
right?
You can, you know, it's easier to change a shot, make a shot something different visually than it would have been otherwise.
I wouldn't do that initially. Initially, I'll edit the film, and then we'll go back, have somebody look at it, and they'll make adjustments.
And when's the last time you'll see any of these pictures? Will it be the week before they open when you lock it and prints are coming out? Or
no, we'll lock it at a certain point. After it's scored,
mm-hmm.
then we'll dub it. Like this picture will be scored, War Horse will be scored, I guess March and beginning of April.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll put it together, marry everything, and then we'll look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to make adjustments, then we'll make adjustments. But nobody will see it until we have the proper music in it, and the sound effects, and that kind of thing.
But once that's done, are you done?
I'm done.
So by summer, you'll probably War Horse again?
I'm on the street.
Well, you just had your 75th birthday in December.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're working your butt off. Can you imagine not going to the cutting room every day, ever?
I've been off for 2, 3, 4 months before.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, I go crazy. But I try to take trips and do stuff. And there is a world out there.
Or can you imagine retiring, or do you think you'll just cut until you can't cut anymore?
Well, as long as they still want me, I'll work. Mm-hmm. Because I don't find it hard anymore.
Mm. It just comes.
I've done everything that you could do. There are challenges with matches, with basic things, performances, and making people relate to each other on the screen. But I hate to use the word hard, because it's not really hard.
Mm. And have you fallen in love with being an editor? Or is it the whole life?
It's my whole life now. Being an editor is my life.
So it's the life you live, not just the work you do? I mean, is it that you love the process of editing, or is it that you love everything that you've created in this 40 years of doing it?
Well, it's become a passion. And with Steven, I'm sure it's a passion. And when two people work together and they care enough about the film, there's nothing too difficult to do.
Mm.
You know, you can overcome anything, make things better. Of course, sometimes young directors, you make things worse. And if they make things worse, then it's got to be unraveled, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not knocking a new editor. Some of them, this woman who did Hurt Locker, just fantastic. Mm. I loved it. But maybe she had that sense I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have a circuitry in your brain that's good for what you do, and mm-hmm. same thing with editors and directors. There's something in there that allows you to say, this feels right, this is good. They would react this way. You know, it's a feeling.
Mm.
And it's nothing you learn in school. In school you learn, you know, maybe script adjustment, you know, to work things around a script. But here you're rewriting a script. You're doing, this is where the film is made. This is where it happens, man. This is it. It's not a film till it's edited.
True enough.
but I like it. You know, you have control over a multi-million dollar product.
Mm.
I'm sitting here and they spend $150 million on a film. And I'm sitting here like this. And, well, let's see, that's worth $6 million, that cut. And, you know,
It's good to be the king.
It's good to be the king. No, Stephen is the king.
Stephen is the king.
I'm the Joker.